98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Bigley Blast.
In their battle to own this godforsaken sports town, the Suns and the Cardinals are back to square. And that's because both teams are still chasing their first championship in Arizona. Both teams are coming off inexplicable, awful postseason collapses that have traumatized the Valley. And both teams are acting like nothing's wrong, that it's all smoke and no fire, that there is nothing to see here. Except we all know there are heavy questions lurking over and around both teams, and both teams are dragging their feet on paying a number one overall draft pick who wants big money. Now, there was a time when the Suns were winning this battle of the heart in Arizona because they're the Suns, because they're the franchise with generations of fans, because they were here first, and because they had elite team chemistry, while the Cardinals, well, they had something far less than that. Now, the Suns can easily regain their advantage in the near future, but there are a lot of unforeseen obstacles that have popped up like whack-a-moles. Was Chris Paul injured? Is he no longer capable of sustained excellence? And why was he so emotionally detached during the playoffs? Does DeAndre Ayton want to be here, or has he really broken bad? Now, maybe the media no longer has the power or the juice to demand answers from these teams, and the answers we're currently getting from both the Cardinals and the Suns are carefully guarded secrets, shielded with sunshine and artificial sweetener, hollow promises that everything is awesome. But as a sports fan, you can demand better, because it's not only your heart they're after, it's your money, and they really want that. All right, today's Bickley Blast brought to you by my great friends at Chapman BMW, who make luxury attainable with two great locations and one great experience. Find them online at chapmanbmw.com.
Yeah, it was a little strange yesterday. James Jones, the general manager of the Phoenix Suns, he spoke to the media and then spoke to Burns and Gambo, and it was very much a tone of acceptance. Hey, we got beat in Game 7. They played well. We didn't play well. Things are still pretty awesome. Here was James Jones in his press conference with the media talking about the need for improving the team heading into the offseason.
You have to improve. So, let's be real. We had a tremendous season. I said this yesterday. The season, the way it ended was disappointing, but the season was not a disappointment. Our team was a really good team. We just didn't have that same level of success in the playoffs. And so I'm not going to change what we do. I'm not going to change my approach to team building, which is to create and construct a team that has a ton of depth, a ton of skill, and great chemistry. We just need to be better. And I think after a summer where our guys improve, we will be.
Yeah, it might be semantics, but I can't get past. I can't dismiss the ending. If the ending was disappointment, I think everything that led up to it kind of falls into the disappointment category, too.
Especially in these circumstances. Yes. Especially how close they were, the pieces they added, the regular season they had, the number one seed that they achieved, to blow it and to lose it all the way they do. You can't claim that realistically. But they're going to try, because they don't want us talking about this other stuff. They want us focusing on what was great.
But there's endless examples in sports of teams that were not built for the playoffs.
Yep.
And the idea of, do fine in the regular season, but is this team built to win a championship?
But that's where it gets so weird with this particular team, because the core was the same, and they were unequivocally built for the playoffs last year. It was so their first run together, they almost won the whole thing.
Yeah.
So how can you come back the next year and then say, and I'm not attacking you when I say this, Jarrett, but how can you say they weren't built for the playoffs? It didn't look like they were.
Well,
do you want me to give you the answer that some people would say? Is last year they played three teams that didn't have their best player to get to the finals.
That's what people would say, and people have said that. Look at their record against teams that lost their that had an injured star. They're unbeaten when that. Yeah, people will say that. I'm going to say that. I think you both make good points, but I also know that me. in watching and writing about this team for the over the course of the last 2 years, there were many moments in many games that made me say this team has got the physicality and the ruthlessness that you need to win a championship. And they exhibited that many, many times. And there were many games where I felt this is what this team knows how to win in a back alley fight. And we've seen them do it. And we saw them come back on teams. And the whole poke the bear thing that you referenced repeatedly over the back half of the season.
Almost too much.
Well, it just, and not necessarily, but I think it's indicative of a team that always showed its ferocity when really challenged.
That moment, and that was back on March 23rd in the Minnesota game, where they were provoked by the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Mm-hmm.
Viscerally provoked, and it was a visceral response. And they came back and they won on the road. Very sturdy performance. The other game that convinced me that this team was going to win it all was the second to last game of the regular season. And they had been in that pattern of, do we rest players? Do we not rest players? They opted to play everybody on a Friday night in Utah against the Jazz. And they came back and they turned it on late and they won that game. And the Jazz were just kind of left shaking their heads. That was another game that convinced me.
Yep.
Okay. That was their 64th win. But I was convinced. And something happened.
If James Jones and the rest of the Phoenix Suns knows that something derailed Chris Paul again, and it was something significant enough where there was nothing left of the Phoenix Suns, which is what we saw.
Yeah.
And if they know that, and they're basing this, we're going to run this back, we'll get DA right, we'll match whatever offer he gets, he's a great dude, we'll appeal to him, we'll make this cool, and we're going to run this back and get this right. I'm down with that. I think you need much more backup point guard. And
yes.
And man, James Jones, he created a problem. Shut up, Jarrett, that he didn't need to. I mean, Tyrese Halliburton was sitting there on a platter for him. Chose not to go down that road. But if there was something tangible with Chris Paul, okay, I'm fine with that. I am accepting of that. Because that is what my eyes tell me happened. And that I can feel good about what the Suns did in the regular season knowing that. This other scenario of them not being built for the playoffs, that's something I really hope isn't the case.
I hope that's not the case either. But you have to ask the question, too, moving forward. Chris Paul has been commended and should be commended for his attitude of, I don't care about my age. If I'm healthy, I'm playing. Has he lost that right
Let's
now?
Let's get into that.
That's
a great question.
Yeah, we'll get into that next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Dan Bickley, Vince Murata. Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
I don't know. I said that last year. Probably said it back in 08. You know, you play long enough and you don't win. Every time you lose, they're going to say it was your best chance. But I think for me, us, is we'll be right back next year. Tell you that much. I'm not retiring tomorrow. Thank God. You know, hopefully I'm healthy, come back, but keep playing.
That is Chris Paul after Game 7 on Sunday. Chris Paul, obviously, in terms of who's getting the criticism from the Phoenix Suns, I think Chris Paul would be number one on that list.
Mm-hmm.
It was a roller coaster ride of a postseason for Chris Paul. Certainly in the first series against New Orleans, and even more so. In the Dallas series, but the last five games of the Dallas series, after he was masterful in Game 2. Just didn't appear to be the same player. People equate that with him turning 37. Again, I'm not buying into that.
No.
I'm not buying into the fact that all of a sudden Jason Kidd cracked the code after 17 years of Chris Paul dictating what he does on a basketball court. I don't think he cracked the code on how to stop him. I think it was a combination of things. But moving forward, we asked a question before the break, Bick. Chris Paul's attitude since he's been in Phoenix, and a commendable attitude at that. If I'm healthy, I'm playing.
Mm-hmm.
Has he lost that right? At age 37 now, with possibly another postseason injury and a late season injury where we thought that might actually turn out to be a boon for the Suns in the postseason. Hey, got a month off and came back before the regular season was over to gear up. This is going to work out perfectly.
Yeah.
It didn't work out perfectly. You talked about, and people have talked about in the aftermath of this season, got to beef up the backup point guard spot.
Yes.
I might even be willing to take it a step further, almost like a co-starting point guard. And that guy's not on the roster
right now. That guy is not on the roster, and then hopefully it will be somebody good enough who can generate their own offense, because they do. I think they do need that regardless. I think you're hitting on something that's very much at the root of all of this, because when you try to trace back, okay, what if anything got Monty Williams and Chris Paul sideways with one another? The only thing I can get at is this playing time issue. We also know that near the end of the regular season, Monty was feeling a lot of anxiety over what to do, whether to rest guys, whether to load manage when you've already secured the number one seed.
And then he wound up saying one thing and doing the other.
Said one thing, did another, and so you could tell that there were forces pulling at him, and I've long believed that, you know, Chris Paul deserves a ton of credit for changing the culture in Arizona. I have
no doubt.
I have mad respect for him. So everything I am saying about this is coming from a place of mad respect for Chris Paul. I do believe that that the Chris Paul show in Phoenix, though, the reason why he burns people out, and there's a reason why they call him an acquired taste, is because he's ubiquitous. He's everywhere at all times. He's got to back off on that. It's you can't have a basketball player running the operation and expect it to be healthy. It's the same thing LeBron James does in L.A. There's a reason why playing with LeBron James is no longer seen as a cool thing to do, because it's not fun. And so I think with Chris Paul, he's got to bend and he's got to let other people coach him. Not coach him in terms of teach him what to do, because he's already got he's got everything you're not going to teach him anything. He already knows it. But in terms of managing his minutes, he's going to have to give that up. He's going to have to give up the idea of we're going to be that team that comes out at you every game of the regular season. He's going to have to let somebody else make that decision, in my opinion. And not have it become a tension point in the organization.
Yeah, I mean, that's up to the Suns and Chris Paul and their coaching staff to determine, okay, how much of this was just wear and tear?
Mm-hmm.
Was it actually an injury? I think those are heavy questions, but James Jones was on with Burns and Gambo yesterday, and they asked the question, how can you better support Chris Paul during the lengthy regular season?
I mean, well, there's multiple ways. The easy one that everyone defaults to is rest. Like, just don't have him play games. Well, you know, if you're not playing games, like, yeah, you're rested, but you're not sharp. So I think the better balance is just our supporting cast, our other guys. We're going to ask him to do more. We're going to ask Mikal to be a better, a more potent offensive player. Cam Johnson, ask him to carry a different load. You know, like all of our guys across the board, our wings, Landry Shamet, it's campaign. We're going to ask him to do more and be efficient and to take some of the in-game load off of Chris so that we don't have to rely on his scoring and playmaking all the time. But, you know, we'll figure that out. We have a summer to figure out how to improve and be better, and we will be.
Yeah, that sounded like running it back right there.
It did, definitely. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and I said it, I think it relies on a true point guard. And Cameron Payne took a step back this year, which is unfortunate because he just got a contract last offseason that was considered a bargain.
But
I think he regressed back to the mean for him. Chris Paul this year in 65 games played 32.9 minutes per game at age 36 for most of the season. That was his highest per-game minute total since the 2014-2015 season when he played 34.8 for the Clippers. That number's got to go down. And I understand the thinking, hey, resting players doesn't necessarily work if they're not getting any run.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can lessen that load by 8 to 10 minutes,
yeah,
if you can play 24 minutes a game, maybe you got a fresher Chris Paul next summer.
And also, until he got hurt, he played every game but one, right?
Yeah.
So who knows? It would have been even more. He probably would have kept doing that for the rest of the season.
Yeah, and so the big debate was coming out of the playoffs, how much needs to be added to this mix? Something big or just something small? It sounds to me like they're very content with the idea of if we can get Mikal Bridges better, if we can get Cam Johnson back. There was
if
a time,
Rondell Moore can become a...
you're right. Yeah. Listen, the parallels are very accurate, and they're very relevant. But I will say this, with Mikal Bridges, we've seen him at that level. Whether or not he can be consistent offensively in the playoffs, that's another matter. He had a good crack at it this year and didn't do so well with it. The Cam Johnson thing is fascinating because there was a moment in time when it really looked like he was breaking through.
Right before the injury.
And he was never quite the same after that.
Had glimpses, but yeah, he was playing by far his best basketball as an NBA player.
Yep.
And it culminated with that masterful performance against the Knicks where he hit the buzzer beater and scored, 38 points in that game?
Mm-hmm.
Just not the same.
And again, for what it's worth, for people who lived through the Mike D'Antoni Suns, and that was a nightmare after a nightmare after a nightmare, and it traumatized the Valley very much like this current thing we're going through now. For people who did not experience that, they will tell you that the one big mistake they made was getting impatient, was getting angry, was getting frustrated, deviating too much, not really placing enough emphasis in running it back and running it back, and they let all of the noise get to them. If you're going to learn those lessons, then you side to running it back.
Are you referring specifically to trading Marion or to letting Amari go?
No, it was a whole bunch of everything. It was the Marion trade. It was Amari Stoudemire wanting to be the leading scorer. It was the anxiety and the nervousness of Mike D'Antoni, who was very non-confrontational. It was Robert Sarver getting impatient. It was Suns fans dealing with this. It was believing the refs were out to get you. It was the David Stern ruling. It was everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the lesson to that was chill out. If you really believe you've got something special, then really believe it.
Well, and they still might believe that, but it's hard for the fan base to buy in.
I know.
4 or 5 days after what we saw in Game 7.
And it's even harder going forward because now you start stacking regular season wins, this market's going to go. So?
Yeah. Show me something different.
Yeah, show me something different. Yeah.
Text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up next for the Cardinals, who's going to pick up the slack for DeAndre Hopkins in the first 6 weeks of the season? Well, NFL.com, they've got their candidate. We'll tell you who they pinpointed next. It's Bickley and Murata Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The national championship game to another assistant.
A little technical difficulty there. My bad. It is Bickley and Murata Mornings on the Thursday edition. Live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios. Dan Bickley, Vince Murata, Sarah Cazell, Lauren behind the board along with Jarrett Carlin. We get the show's getting bigger. 5 people on the show now, at least for today.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of questions of moving forward and looking at the beginning of the season for the Arizona Cardinals in September. We know this. We know DeAndre Hopkins will not be there for 6 weeks, suspension for PED. So who's going to pick up the slack? They obviously made a big move on draft night, Bick, picking up Hollywood Brown in the trade. They give up their first-round pick, and they bring in a deep threat at wide receiver. And the morning after the draft, we were like, wow, this is a great move. They addressed their number 2 wide receiver. Hollywood Brown is in a better spot in an offense more suited to him, and he doesn't have to be the number 1 guy. But now he has to be the number 1 guy. So who picks up the slack for DeAndre Hopkins? NFL.com had a piece from Bucky Brooks, who he lists 10 second-year breakout candidates in 2022 for the NFL. And he, at number 6, has Rondale Moore of the Arizona Cardinals. Brooks writes, the departure of Christian Kirk and 6-game suspension for DeAndre Hopkins will create more opportunities the second-year receiver, especially early in the season. While the Cardinals added Marquise Brown to the mix, they will still need more to play like an all-star slot receiver who enables Kyler Murray to operate like a blackjack dealer slinging cards from the pocket. With his speed, quickness, and open-field running skills posing problems for defenders in space, Moore's production could skyrocket in an expanded role for Arizona. I'm not saying it can't happen, but the way the season transpired, the second half of the season especially, for Rondale Moore, where his production dropped off and his usage got a little curious for my taste, I want to see it before I believe it. He's definitely got the talent to do it. It's up to others now to unlock that.
Yeah, and this has been something that Cliff Kingsbury struggled with, and that is getting guys and using them very creatively and maximizing their talents, and instead of kind of pigeonholing their talents, if you will. Yeah, I do believe Rondale Moore's got the gifts to do it. We saw it in flashes last year. It has to happen, in my opinion, for this team to kind of get by and weather the storm without DeAndre Hopkins. And if it does happen, they'll have a really good receiving crew when D-Hop gets back. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious now with this, the acquisition last year of Zach Ertz. You draft Trey McBride in the second round. Is this going to be one of those really heavy tight end passing offenses now? It's got to increase. I mean, that was one of the things that was missing in the first 2.5 years of the Cliff Kingsbury, Kyler Murray era, was really a solid, reliable threat at the tight end spot. If I had to guess right now, I think Zach Ertz and Trey McBride pick up more of the slack than Rondale Moore does. Not to say that they won't use him, but I think Moore will be used kind of in that same role. A lot of behind the line of scrimmage kind of stuff, and hopefully his speed can make you plays.
Well, if Rondale Moore is truly going to be a breakout guy, and DeAndre Hopkins is coming back in week 7, and Hollywood Brown is going to take the top off the defense, that doesn't sound like a two wide receiver. That sounds like they're still going to play wide open football to me. And I think this is sort of one of the things that I know Wolf is certainly going to be watching, and that is exactly what do they do? Do they play more traditional? Do they play more two tight end sets? Do they play more Kyler Murray under center? Like I said, I'll believe all that when I see it. But it's kind of funny because we kind of talked about, you know, the Suns, and maybe they need to dictate to Chris Paul a little more than vice versa. There's a feeling the same is true with Kyler Murray, that the Cardinals have done everything they can to make him comfortable to the point of maybe coddling, maybe. And maybe now it's at the point where they need to demand. They need to say, okay, listen, if you really want that money, this is what we're going to expect of you.
Yeah, could be that.
And again, so I think a lot of it depends. Are we really going to see this big, noticeable shift in the way the Cardinals play offense? That is something I'm going to have to see to believe. I think there's a big adjustment necessary, and I've been saying it for a couple of years.
Don't you think we would have seen that by now, though?
I would have.
I mean,
yeah.
Is it possible that Kyler Murray reaches a new level if he is engaged and happy with his situation? Maybe that happens, but it's going to be harder without DeAndre Hopkins. But people will point out, I mean, Cliff Kingsbury got this job to revolutionize the offense. And in all fairness, at times it's looked that way. But the pattern we have, especially over the last 2 years, and again, I'll throw out the first year of Kingsbury and Murray together and label it experimental. The last 2 years, the pattern we have is that as the season goes on, they get figured out. And,
yeah.
You know, when you look at their offensive rankings, they're decent,
which is
not revolutionary.
Which is why the play action technique, the dynamic of having a quarterback under center is so important, because when teams figure you out, that is something that is eternal. It's something that's evergreen in the NFL. You can always keep defenses off balance with play action. You do it right if you've got enough of a running back threat, enough of a running game, and enough of a quarterback. It's like time and tide. It's always there.
Cynthia Freeland of NFL Network, their analytics expert, she put together a piece that was published yesterday on NFL.com about the top 11 offenses in 2022 in terms of win share projections. The Cardinals are not in the top 11. That's a third of the league. The rankings are Buffalo 1, Chargers 2, Cincinnati 3, Tampa Bay 4, followed by the Rams, Kansas City, Green Bay, Dallas, New Orleans, Minnesota, and Miami.
Mm.
So not a ton of at least analytical expectation. And probably you have to assume that the Hopkins absence factors into those rankings.
Right.
It does make concern, though, because not replacing Chandler Jones and then not having an elite offense to make up for, you know, a mediocre defense.
Yeah, you're right. I think early on in the season, the onus falls on the offense to keep this team afloat until, you know, there's people that are expecting on the defensive side still some sort of veteran cornerback acquisition that's really going to shift the strength of that unit. And I know people were really hoping it was going to be Bradbury, who got cut by the Giants. He ends up on a one-year, $10 million deal with the Eagles, so he stays in the division. But even after that acquisition, people who follow the Cardinals, cover the Cardinals on a regular basis, say they still expect that to happen. Until that happens, though, I truly believe the onus falls on the offense for the first 6 weeks of the season.
Yeah, no, it's going to have to. And again, there are no excuses. There shouldn't be any excuses. We're pretty deep along in this program, but you've got all this time to scheme around a traumatic event, the loss of DeAndre Hopkins. So do it. Really, I mean, it's that simple. Do it.
Yeah. Stop talking about it and
do
prove
it.
You could do it. You could text your thoughts to the FanDuel text line at 620-620 right now. Coming up next, we'll get the latest on the Arizona Diamondbacks straight from their president and CEO. Derek Hall joins us for his weekly visit next. It's Bickley and Marotta Mornings, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station.
Madam Speaker. I have the high privilege and distinct honor of presenting to you the president.
He's the president and CEO of your Arizona Diamondbacks.
Hail to the chief.
Derek Hall.
The president.
That's that time of the week. We talk Diamondbacks baseball with the president and CEO of the Arizona Diamondbacks, Derek Hall, who joins us here on the 72 Sold Sports Line. Derek, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Vince. Not terrible. I'm actually sitting in Bick's old town near the Windy City and ready for the series.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Kind of a rough schedule. Four against the Dodgers, including a doubleheader. No rest. Right to Chicago. Four against the Cubs. And things have not gone well. I mean, there were bright spots in the Dodgers series, but overall they were just too much to handle. Just your thoughts on what transpired in Los Angeles, Derek.
Yeah, what a difference a week makes, right? Going from three over to three under. But I think the recent historical trends should have pointed us in that direction. It's unbelievable how, you know, go back to the Cubs series, which, you know, we should have won two out of three or even swept them. And yet we have not won a series against the Cubs at Chase Field since 2017. Then you go to the Dodgers series. Taking the series from them a couple weeks back was great, but that was at home. Anytime we go to L.A., for whatever reason, we just cannot play. And we've lost nine straight there. I think it's 18 of our last 19 at Dodger Stadium we haven't won.
Yeah.
Wow. But, you know, this time you could say we were competitive, and we were. I mean, three of the four games were two or fewer runs that we lost by. So, I mean, I think these guys have a lot of confidence. They're producing, you know, at a slow pace. They're getting there. But for whatever reason, we have to get over the hump when it comes to L.A.
And what's a shame, too, is that this losing streak has coincided with you guys having the stage all to yourselves after the Suns' untimely demise.
Absolutely, Bick. Yeah, and you know, we certainly wanted the Suns to continue going, and you're right, though. When that stopped and there's no hockey, there's no basketball, all eyes are on the D-backs. And at the time, we were playing well. We were on a bit of a roll. And again, it's a hiccup in the schedule. So I'm hoping that fans, sports fans, will continue watching this team, cheering for this team, and seeing that they're young players that are developing before their very eyes. Because the feedback I'm getting from our fans is this team is likable. They like these players. They like Varsho. They like Rojas. You know, they like the hustle. I mean, these guys do not give up. And the starting pitching, though it took a step backwards this last 6 to 10 games, has been really solid. So I think that's a brand of baseball that fans subscribe to.
Derek Hall, president and CEO of the Diamondbacks, our guest here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. I think maybe the way you remedy the Dodger Stadium issue, Derek, is you find out what Christian Walker eats before he plays at Dodger Stadium.
And feed
everybody else. I mean, his success there hitting home runs has been uncanny.
It's amazing how he plays there, whether it's against a lefty or a righty. He just, you know, he prefers to hit there, and the batter's eye works for him. Other guys, I don't think it's intimidation. You know, I really don't. But let's remember, too, we're all sizing ourselves up against the Dodgers. If we get where we want to go, Vince, in the next couple of years,
yeah,
you have to compare yourself to the Dodgers. They are arguably the best team in baseball. And when you look at that lineup, Christian Walker can do damage. A lot of our guys can do damage, but it doesn't matter. You put two up, three up, it's hard to come back in the next half inning and put a zero up there, because one through nine, they're all going to destroy you, or can. You know, it's an amazing team, and I think our guys are up for the challenge. I mean, they're disappointed in the way they played. They feel like they can match up against any team, including the Dodgers, and at some point, that's got to turn, and I think it will. Again, let's look back to how we played against them at Dodger Stadium. At Chase Field, not Dodger Stadium. And so, you know, again, I think every team is saying, how do we look against the Dodgers? How do we look against the Mets? How do we look against the Astros? They're just one of the elite teams that you've got to get there, and we're working on it.
Right, and we've been talking for years about how you guys need to get a different methodology in place here to compete with those teams, and when you get young prospects like Alec Thomas come up and flash right away, I think it kind of infuses some belief that there is more on the way, that this plan really might be underway. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, thank you, Bick. I obviously do, and I know that we've got a lot more talent at the AA and AAA level ready to come up as well within the next couple of months. So I think fans are going to be really excited to see those players come up. I talked about it, you know, years ago when I was with the Dodgers, and we had, you know, five consecutive rookies of the year, and all our fans were watching AAA. They were watching Albuquerque. Who's coming next? You know, is it Mondesi and Karros and Piazza and Hollinsworth, and we signed Nomo? That's the feeling that I hope our fans will get here. You know, watching AA, watching AAA, those farm reports really do matter, because these players are going to make a difference, and they're going to be here for a long time.
Yeah, Alec Thomas specifically, Bick mentioned him. He came up partly out of necessity with the Carson Kelly injury and Varsho going behind the plate. But so far, and I know it's only 11 games, and I also know, Derek, it's very hard even for the top prospects once they arrive to stay in the big leagues, but this kid kind of looks like he's cut to stay here for a long time and not go down again. Would you agree?
Totally agree, Vince. I do, and you know, his heart rate is not way up there either. I mean, I know he had a flaw in the outfield play. You know, that ball took sort of a strange hop, went to the wall. Now, out of fairness, you know, Freeman came up after that and drove the ball down the left field line, so those guys probably would have scored anyways. But he doesn't look intimidated. He doesn't look scared. He looks very comfortable, both at the plate and out in the field. So I agree with you. But the most important thing is, when you bring up a player like that, and a prospect like that, you got to play him. And that's the beauty of it. It hasn't been, okay, we're going to sit you against lefties. No, he's out there each and every game, and that's part of development. And that's what happened with Varsho last year. He came up, and we thought, boy, does he look overmatched, right? I think everybody did. And then he got comfortable. He developed before our very eyes. And this is a guy, when you look on deck and he's there, you can't wait till he gets to the plate. That's going to happen with these other guys, too, if you play them once you bring them up.
Yeah. All right. This is yesterday's news, but I was curious about this. Dan Bellino, the ump that ran Madison Bumgarner, who kind of got your ire. Did you accept his apology? Did you ever get a satisfactory explanation?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, since Bumgarner is our guy and he's my guy, and I fired off an email as quickly as I could when it happened, it's tough for me to say, oh, I feel better, it's behind me. But yes, I mean, I give him a lot of credit for apologizing. Not too many individuals and not too many umpires would do that. So I really give him credit for that. But going back to that game, I mean, Dan, that still hurt, right? I mean, we're lucky we pulled that one out. And, you know, you're taking your one or two or three starter out of the game in the first inning. That's really tough, and tough on us, especially on a road trip. So, I mean, it hurt. It still hurts. But I do accept the apology, and I give him a lot of credit for having done so.
Talking with Derek Hall here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. When things turned around and you had that run of success, Derek, a lot of it had to do with the starting pitching. One through five, they were doing a great job. This series in Los Angeles, you know, the starting ERA, I think, was over 11 in the four games. And you have to consider, obviously, you mentioned it, their murderer's row lineup. But where is the concern level right now for the rotation? Or are you chalking it more up to the Dodgers just being a good offensive team?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, anytime you see regression, you want to get back to the level that you were, because that's been our strength. And I think we'll get back there. And as we've talked about, Vince, in the past, starting pitching is so contagious. If one guy takes the ball and goes 6-7 strong innings, you think the next night that the next pitcher to step up and hopefully will outdo the night before. So I think we'll start to see that come back. You put a lot of pressure on your bullpen in a situation like that. But as you mentioned, a lot of games and a lot, you know, in a few amount of days, sorry. And I just think they're going to be fine. I really do. But at times like that, you hope your offense can step up and cover it, right? We talked about our offense needing to wake up. We said a few weeks back at some point here, the starting pitching is going to take a step backwards. Well, we just saw that. So now we need them to take a step forward. Mm-hmm. But if it continues, you need the offense to pick you up. And we also need those guys to come in and stop that gap when they have to eat up innings.
I asked you this, and I ask you these frivolous uniform questions because I do enjoy that.
Yeah, yes, you do.
So earlier in the season, you know, I had asked if it was just going to be white and gray, and it was for a really long time. But now we're seeing the Sedona Reds. We're seeing the Saturday Blacks. We're seeing the Serpientes uniforms. And a lot of fans were wondering, Derek, and maybe you can clear it up, was there some sort of supply chain issue that you couldn't get the full complement of your uniforms, or was that all planned?
No, that's true. That did play a part in it. Good question. No, it did, definitely. But we also wanted to go with, because you did ask that question, and we wanted to make sure we went with the white and the gray on the road. But I think it's good to be mixing it back up. But we did have supply chain issues. We really did. I'm not sure if they were sitting out in the port, but we couldn't get them. And you know, our fans also love the Serpientes, you know, unis. And this year we introduced the pants. I wasn't sure how that was going to look. I got to say, you know, we're pulling them off. It looks pretty good because last year we had the white pants with the Serpientes. But I kind of like it. You know, it's been a refreshing little look for our guys. They like it.
All right, so what are you going to do in Chicago over the weekend besides I hear the pizza there is good.
Yeah, you know, Gonzo and I are actually taking we have our evening on the diamond every year, as you know, and we had one in September of last year just because of the pandemic. And one of the auction items was for Gonzo and I to take a group out to dinner. So we're going to do that tonight. So we're actually not going to be at the ballpark tonight. We'll be watching with them, and we're going to Gibson's, and then we'll be at the game tomorrow with some sponsors. But since the pandemic, Bick, I just haven't traveled much. Just, you know, I don't want to contribute to any problems in the clubhouse, and I feel like we should limit it to the traveling party for the most part, let them stay in their bubble and stay healthy. I mean, we just got bit, you know, the last couple of days with some COVID cases, positive cases. So stay away, let them do their own thing. But it's going to be fun to be at Wrigley, as it always is. And again, we'll be with some partners and some of our employees, and guys that are going to play host. We're looking forward to it.
Sounds good.
Well, Derek, have fun this weekend. Best of luck to the team. We'll talk to you next Thursday.
Thank you, guys. You're the best. Talk to you next week.
Thank you, Derek Hall, D-backs president, CEO. Our guest weekly here on Bickley and Murata Mornings. Coming up next, something we do daily at 9 o'clock, social studies with Sarah Cazell. That's straight ahead here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.